The topic tonight is awareness of the body in practice. The Buddha said that all the Dharma can be found in this fathom-long body. There are several meanings to the word Dharma. It can mean all that the Buddha taught, and it can mean all that there is, all experience, phenomena, things. Both meanings apply to this quote about the fathom-long body holding all the Dharma. Everything we experience comes into our awareness through our physical senses. Paying attention to the body will teach us all the Buddha taught. A lot of people forget their bodies, would almost walk off and leave them behind. To others, the body is just a transportation device or a source of pleasure or discomfort. Mostly, at least in our culture, it is an object seen and judged by others. We lavish attention on the body as an object and little to it as life itself. In meditation practice, it's very important to be in touch with the body, to inhabit our experience. Rather than our usual paying attention to the world around the body, in meditation we bring attention inward, so we feel the impact the world has on us, physically and emotionally. All experience comes to us through the body and echoes there as emotion and thought. The body is always here and now. The mind, on the other hand, has no boundaries in time and space. It's the body that holds the truth of our immediate experience. It holds our traumas, too, and remembers how much a cup of liquid weighs, and it has a wisdom we too often ignore. During his many decades of teaching, the Buddha wrote poetry collected in a book called the Dhammapada. Verse 299 says, in part, "They awaken are always wide awake. Those yogis whose mindfulness, both day and night, is constantly immersed in the body." The term awaken is used to mean enlightenment or liberation from dukkha. The tradition of Buddhist meditation that I teach is sometimes called mindfulness meditation, sometimes vipassana or insight meditation. These names refer to awareness turned inward, rooted in the body. Of course, while we're at it, we encounter the mind, But that's the sixth sense in Buddhist psychology. The body that I'm referring to in this talk has only five senses. There are four foundations to the state of mindfulness that can liberate us from the sources of suffering. In other words, free us from stress or dukkha. These are laid out in the Satipatthana Sutta. The first foundation in the sutta is the body. The other three build on this awareness of the body. So it's the foundation of the foundations. It's where we start and continue throughout our practice. The Satipatthana Sutta sets out very detailed instructions for how to become mindful of the body. This evening, I'm just going to offer the basics. The usual object of concentration in meditation is the breathing. So this is where attention is initially focused, for many reasons. Not the least is that the breathing is always there. But also importantly, this draws the attention to the internal experience of the body. When we're practicing mindfulness of breathing, we look for the sensations of the breath that are easiest to follow. The choices include sensations in the chest, the belly, or at the mouth or nose. And sometimes whatever sensation we're following can indicate that the breath is really subtle. Other times it's deep and fast and impossible to miss. Also, I can't emphasize this enough, it is felt from inside the body. Even the air entering at the nose and the mouth, we're feeling that with the outside of the nose and the lips. Once we have a lock on wherever we're following the breath, we can shift to subtler sensations. That's like practicing or exercising with heavier weights. If we go from the sensations in the chest to the sensations at the nose, it's more difficult. Half of concentration is guiding our attention to one object. The other half is keeping it there. So the Buddha's instructions are to be aware of breathing in, out, long or short, deep or shallow, etc., for every breath. This engages interest, and that's essential for investigation. We watch as if we're constantly asking, what is this moment of experiencing the breath like? Now, we can also use pleasure or effort to sustain concentration. Interest, pleasure, effort. Many people only ever use effort and miss those more efficient and more pleasant means of watching the breath. Inevitably, as you probably saw this evening, while we're sitting here watching the sensations of breathing, thoughts arise. This week, while I was on a solo camping retreat in the mountains, I saw a lot of thoughts pass through my awareness, mostly without sticking. Just come up, go through the mind, pass away. But some thoughts are like thieves. They sneak up and run off with our attention before we know it. Then all of a sudden, we realize we're lost in thought. This is great. It's natural for the mind to wander, but we have noticed it. This is a return to mindfulness, and it should be celebrated. Definitely not judged as a failure of meditation. So it's important we meet this moment of realizing we've been lost in thought with acceptance of ourself and the truth of what's happened. We have noticed the mind has wandered and can now bring it back. Let me emphasize that the ability to accept what is must be cultivated for us to progress toward freedom from suffering. Acceptance of the truth of the moment is essential. And we practice that every time we notice that the mind has wandered. Another opportunity we have in that moment is a chance to train the mind to come back to mindfulness. Now, if the thoughts that have stolen our attention are attractive, this can be challenging. But we just keep gently and kindly inviting the attention to come back. So these are kind of simple forms of concentration and acceptance that, when they're developed while we're sitting, enable us to follow the rest of the instructions in the Satipatthana Sutta, which include mindfulness of the body lying down, getting up, standing, walking, and working. So in our formal sitting meditation practice, we create an anchor of awareness in the body, and it serves us through the rest of our daily lives, any posture we're in, anything we're doing. Another of the four foundations of mindfulness is what goes on in our heads, what stole our attention away from the breath, and that's usually thinking. So what is the difference between thinking and mindfulness of thought, this next foundation? The difference, the sine qua non of mindfulness of thought, is keeping some attention on the body. This involves a shifting of attention back and forth between the body and the thought. And it can happen incredibly fast. Buddhist psychology, which is called the Abhidhamma, talks about mind moments, which are unimaginably small units of time. And that's how fast our minds can shift from one object of attention to another. And this shifting of attention needs to be practiced, and it creates a mental split screen. You know, sort of like all of you on the screen right now. I can look at one person or another and maintain an awareness of all of you, too. Don't overthink this. Just trust that the mind can do this. Like when you trusted that you could ride a bike and off you went. Repeatedly inviting the attention back to breathing trains the mind so that when our ability to go back and forth like this is strong enough, we can observe what thoughts are without getting lost in them. So as I said initially, these foundations build on each other. And yeah, you can skip ahead, but that won't do you as much good as if you start with the body and progress from there. Now let's talk about mindfulness of emotions, also called feelings. That lost in thought experience is valuable also because the stories that it contains often evoke emotions. A lot of people will describe their emotions in terms of the story they tell themselves about what happened to cause their emotions. And they'll end up with no idea how their emotions feel in the body, despite the fact that they're called feelings. So with either thoughts or emotions or other mind states, the place to investigate our experience of them is in the body. We can observe emotions by purposefully looking for where in the body the emotion registers without being consumed by it or swept back into the train of thought that evoked it. Now that sounds like some fancy footwork, but it really isn't if we just take the time to really get a strong awareness of the body established. Anyway, we need to use concentration to stay with the body's experience and thus stay out of the story, that train of thought. If the location of the emotion isn't obvious, and for a lot of people this is really difficult, but just go through and investigate the usual suspects, the stomach, the jaw, the chest, arm muscles, clenched fists, etc. Now, back to the story for a moment. I apologize if I'm jumping around, but this is training in the split screen. The usually unconscious purpose of the story is to get us out of the discomfort of the emotion, the feeling. In other words, we take refuge in the wrong place, the active thought-generating mind. And in that story, we'll retrace the events that we think caused our emotion. And maybe we're fantasizing about changing what happened, having a better response, whatever, basically changing the past. Now, probably somewhere in the 90 percentile, people realize that, or they don't realize this, but it's true, that thinking can't solve our discomfort. And in fact, the opposite is true. Thinking actually prolongs our dukkha. Because we're just going over that story again and again. Buddha takes so many approaches to this in the suttas. My favorite analogy that he has is that it's like standing next to a wildfire, throwing wood at it. That's the fuel that our emotions have. And if we keep thinking about them, we prolong our suffering. So when we're watching the physical sensations of the emotion, we're paying attention directly to our own true experience. No fantasy, no story, just what we're going through. Because what happens in the body is true, it's here, it's now. And in contrast, thoughts can and do lie. You know, this kind of direct attention is what most of us want in life. And ironically, this loving attention is something that we can give to ourselves. And it starts here, by being with our own emotions. And this is also healing. It allows our emotions to run their course without being artificially prolonged. This working through our dukkha is progress toward liberation that happens in our mindfulness practice. How does this work in our lives? Well, I can tell you how it worked for me. Early in my practice, within the first 3 years, I realized how helpful it would be if I could be mindful during daily life. So I tried to just be aware of my breathing as often as possible through the day. Powerful emotions became a trigger for me to pay close attention to my breathing. Eventually, I learned to also focus on the way my hands and other parts of my body felt as I moved them to do work. When we get to where we can easily identify the way the body experiences our emotions, we get another benefit. The body will tell us when we're under the influence of those emotions, and as a result, we're in danger of doing something we'll regret. I'm talking about, like, when we're angry afraid or jealous, you know, what's often called the negative emotions. If we're aware of thoughts and emotions that cloud our judgment, we have a better chance of making better choices about how we respond. There are payoffs at every level of our lives. Lower stress, clearer thinking, and better judgment. A deeper understanding of our own minds. Wisdom. And improved relationships with others. Now I'd like to end with a poem by Megan Unitillo entitled, "I Hope You Find Home Within Your Body." May you take comfort within the curves of your skin and the laugh lines around your mouth and the creases next to your eyes. May you see how there is strength within your bones and the force that exists within your lungs and the power that exists within your heart. May you find joy in the sound of your voice and wonder in the thoughts that live within your head. And delight in your ability to love with your whole self. I hope you find a home within your body. I hope you treat it with tenderness and care, and with honesty and truth, and with grace and acceptance, too. I hope you find a home within your body. For your body is the first place that will always shelter you. Thank you.